Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. You are listening live to the internet's only college football podcast.
Live as in you, the listener, are currently alive.
You're alive. Yes.
Nice job on that, by the way.
Thank you.
What if this is the last thing somebody listens to before they die?
Oh, come on. There are so many worse things that people have listened to before they... I mean, think of how many people die in hospitals listening to, like, somebody emptying a bedpan next to them. This is paradise compared to
that. I mean,
what
if you heard Big Sean before you die?
Sure.
You know what? That would encourage me, because Big Sean would say things like, I don't let haters take my energy, or some other lifeless line like that, and I would just go, yeah, let's go. This is enough.
Take me, big hater. The big hater in the sky is calling me home.
Like, anyone cares enough about your awful rap to hate you actively, as opposed to, like, Big Sean and rap is basically raisins in anything for me. Like, oh, who put that in here? That's unfortunate. I don't understand why anybody enjoys these things. That's a Big Sean appearance.
Yeah.
We have this week, for our midweek show, a couple of agenda items. We are going to look at a couple games up ahead. The Big Ten is back. The Big Ten is back.
Speaking of big, I would like to point out a social media phenomenon whereby the three of us on this call at this time have been followed just now by the World's Strongest Man account on Twitter, which has been around since 2015, which follows... as of this recording, only 46 people, almost all of whom are actual strong men, from Mark Henry to The Mountain to Lou Ferrigno. It also follows Mr. Universe, Miss USA, Action Bronson, and then Ryan Annie, Jason Kirk, Spencer Hall. I don't know what to make of this. Perhaps they need our assistance in the greater Bradenton metro area to cover this year's event. But Spencer, could you, as our foremost strongman expert, could you sort of walk us through what might be happening here?
Well, apparently we give off enough strength aura and strength vibes, or the appearance, and I think this may be it more than anything else, of being people who appreciate a properly thick-necked man and the achievements that he has in the field of sport. And I would point out, by the way, legendary strongmen and sport, like, hand in hand, man. Like, no, you don't get to the World's Strongest Man without popping up somewhere else first. Great example of this would be the legendary Bill Kazmaier, also a privileged follow of the prestigious World's Strongest Man account, Bill Kazmaier. You may recognize him from numerous reruns of the World's Strongest Man competition, longtime commentator on said program. Where did he play football? As a thick-necked, robustly forearmed, and gigantically bicepsed young man, he played at the University of Wisconsin, y'all. Go Badgers.
Well, of course he did. We will be the broadcast team for this year's World Strongest Man competition. Let's just say it and see what happens.
Speaking into existence, sure. I do wish that, like, Spencer, I appreciate that strongmen come up through other sports. Like, I imagine college Olympic style wrestling is probably another one, if I had to guess. Maybe
definitely there are some wild cards in there.
Is there like, can I get a tennis player? Because that I would really enjoy, if it was like, wow, this tennis player, like, his backhand is trash, but his lats are fucking huge.
But his forehand,
wow. you seen the neck on this dude? Oh my God. I will tell you a few of my favorite backgrounds and competition for these guys, yeah. or just even for work. There are an inordinate number of stonemasons, which, yeah. a lot of guys who are like, I'm being the stone, somebody else mace.
And not, thus and I not am in stone like mace. Not in like a ancient cultic order kind of thing. Like, no, literally.
No.
Rock carriers.
No, this guy's actually a rock carrier, and he saves on labor by... Yeah, he's a Goron. That's... You know, the Gorons in Zelda are basically strong men. They really are.
Yeah, in Breath of the Wild, all they talk about is working out.
Oh, let's get really sweaty!
They're like, Link, you're going to get so jacked, bro. And Link's
they are!
I'm going to weigh 47 pounds regardless.
They're the only people in the series who use the word bro mm-hmm. and talk about eating, but which is funny because the way that Gorons get swole is by eating rocks.
Yeah.
So they're like, yeah, bro, got to get the rocks in. Then I got to go. Like, the Gorons are so that they actually ask Link in Breath of the Wild what workout plan he's on. That's not a lie.
Also, well, I mean, Link follows the same plan. What does he make? Unidentifiable pixelated mush. And it makes him strong, doesn't it?
That's pre-workout. That's what that is.
Link's ideal diet really has him leaning toward pre-diabetic. It really does, because the most powerful things he eats are like stewed bananas and like stewed durian. It's just fructose, and he eats tons of it. His diet is horrible.
He's basically on the Carnival cruise ship diet.
He is. He's like, oh, did you see all this tropical fruit they got on the bar?
I'll take it all in cobbler form, please.
Link's got the metabolism of like an electron. He's fine.
Well, because he doesn't have anywhere to sleep. He just runs all day.
Yeah, man. It's called an endurance athlete.
Listen, the minute he stops,
he's an ultra marathoner, isn't he?
Also, he's got 20 hearts. He's fine.
So when Link meets the Gorons, it's ultra marathoner meets strongman.
Yeah, it's like they have a big debate about cardio. And that's fascinating. Right. And like
They do, yeah. The endurance versus strength thing where they're like, where do you want your hearts? The thing is, and I think this is an appropriate metaphor for training, when you have to get your hearts exchanged to allocate whether you're going to have stamina or strength and be able to take damage, you have to go to this evil spirit who's like, I will now put you through excruciating pain to alter your body. And I'm like, yeah, that's a personal trainer.
Yep.
That's a coach.
Also, you meet that dude in like a back alley.
Hello.
You do. You meet him by a river, literally, like by a creek. It's like, yeah, go down to the creek and talk to John.
He'll pop up all over in the desert town. He's like, hey, psst, come back here. I'll teach you how to exercise.
Some guy behind a convenience store in Reno who's like, hey, man, let's make it happen. The other, they're not all, by the way, strongmen don't all come from like obviously like jacked sport backgrounds. That's not saying basketball players aren't strong, but Hafþór Bjornsson, better known to you as the Mountain, he started off as a basketball player. And which he wasn't 400 pounds. So Iceland, if you're wondering, yo, why wasn't Iceland dominating international basketball? Yeah, he wasn't the Mountain. He wasn't a 400 pound center.
Imagine telling the fucking Mountain, like, all right, you got 6 fouls. I want you to use them. if you get 2 flagrants, I want you to use them, right? Like, that means you're going to go murder 2 people, and then we're going to win.
He straight up killed a dude. Wow. Also, basketball, not an uncommon switch, because America's best living strongman is Brian Shaw, and he was a basketball player as well. And if you've ever seen Brian Shaw, my favorite Brian Shaw thing anyone has ever done with him, because I will tell you, Brian Shaw, you're going, oh, who's Brian Shaw? Well, if I told you he was a guy who went 6'8", usually averaged around 420 pounds from Colorado, just this giant, literal Rocky of a man. He, one, is the strongman who looks most like a Goron. He really does. Like, if we're talking Gorons in Zelda, totally looks like a Goron. He's got a big old bald head. Looks like he wants to talk bro stuff with you. But
wow. So this dude's photos, like, he looks like he's 2 feet tall, but he's not.
No, he's built he's built like he's 2 feet tall, right? Like that thick. And then he's 6'8". So my favorite... go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the next sport that's going to contribute to this, that's golf. And our sweet, sweet Bryson. who's gained like 50 pounds. For people who don't know, this is a man who's gained like 50 pounds in a year. And here, this is from a Golf Channel article. This is his general daily diet. Breakfast, 4 eggs, 5 pieces of bacon, toast, 2 protein shakes. Throughout day, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, plural, macro bars, snacks, which who knows, 2 to 3 protein shakes. Dinner, steak, potatoes, 2 protein shakes. That's 6 or 7 protein shakes a day on top of like a regular amount of food.
Just to play fucking golf.
Okay, that's interesting. How many calories did you say that was?
It doesn't say how many calories. It does say that it is almost 100 grams of protein a day.
Yeah, which I will tell you, 100 grams of protein a day, not really excessive. Like, he's going for bulk there.
Sure.
Like, he really is. Like, 100...
He estimates it's 3,000 to 3,500 calories.
Okay, that's fine.
It's not that much.
I'm going to take you through Brian Shaw's day.
Okay.
You ready for B. Shaw's standard day, sure, to stay at a svelte and cut 420 at 6'8"?
These numbers are absurd. Go ahead.
By the way, this is...
create a wrestler numbers gone wrong.
It's just like when they're like, oh, I guess we got to put a height and weight for Blanca. Like, sure, whatever.
I mean, these guys are... I mean, I'm not saying this is good. Like, when these guys talk, you can hear them breathing, right? Like,
sure.
Yeah, so... But I will say this. You eat like this and you can deadlift 1,000 pounds.
Okay.
Pounds and bench 525 and squat 903, which are all Brian Shaw records. I have my favorite Brian Shaw record, which I didn't quite get out, by the way. They put this enormous 6'8", 420-pound man on a rower on camera, and they said, go for 100 meters. And when he pulled, the entire rower scooted back 3 feet. Like, he went, and the thing went, and they had to start over because his first pull knocked the thing a good third of the way across a good-sized room. So
if he does that enough, he is using the rowing machine literally as a rower.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, no, the rower, he has a land rower. He has a mobile land rower with every rower. Yeah, they asked him to do 100 meters as fast as he could, and he did it in 12.8 seconds.
Good God.
Yeah, he's a freak. So his diet, I know, yeah, that 3,500 is like real cute and everything.
Yeah.
So Brian Shaw, breakfast, 8 eggs, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and peanut butter.
Same. I'm so with him so far.
Yeah. So breakfast is 1,180 calories. Meal two. Notice.
Meal two.
Not lunch. Meal not even, two.
I have transcended even, your meal labels.
He's not even at brunch yet.
Yeah. An hour later, he has a whey protein shake with 80 grams of protein. And then he tops it off. Just in case you needed a top off, he topped it off with two granola bars and some peanut butter. That's another 1,000 calories there. We have arrived at lunch, at which point most people would be dead. pasta, meat sauce, grass-fed ground beef, angel hair pasta. He recommends grass-fed because you can eat it and it's easier to digest. And I imagine digestion is a very big concern for anyone eating this much food.
Eating a jar of peanut butter a day.
Maybe two, man. I don't know. I'm not even done with this. That's another 2,100 calories right there. So we're already well. We've smoked Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah.
Golf ain't shit. Meal five, which is labeled as post-lunch, pre-dinner. Hobbits must have been amazing power lifters. for the fifth meal, Shaw cooks a bunch of lean organic ground turkey, white jasmine rice, and broccoli. That sounds fine.
Sure.
You know, how much of it? 1,400 calories worth.
Okay.
Right? Meal six, also known as
meal team six.
As dinner. On this day that Men's Journal recorded, he described that as an atypical meal. He was going to be deadlifting the next day, so he went to a carb-heavy meal, some Italian. And usually meal five is another pound of beef and potatoes with asparagus. On this night, it was 3,430 calories worth of pasta-heavy Italian food.
So that's a huge day of eating.
I'm not done.
I mean, just that meal is a huge day of eating for a regular person.
Right.
And that is meal six.
Yeah. No. We have the Marvel post scene here. We have the little stinger, the preview, right? The post-credit scene. Meal seven, nighttime snack and protein shake. Before Shaw goes to bed, he has a midnight snack. This meal includes 4 pieces of cheesecake and a whey protein shake with 80 grams of protein. Just a quick 1,600 calories before bed, finishing up a 12,000 calorie day, You said Bryson had 100 grams of protein. That's cute. That's real cute.
But we're what have we?
Bishaw's sitting at 705 grams of protein.
this is the closest.
705. Have either of you ever tried to eat triple digit grams of protein in a day?
No.
Why the fuck would I do that?
No. I have.
You will hate a Vegas buffet?
You will hate food. You will absolutely hate food if you try to eat that much protein in a day. It's horrible.
That diet is the closest any human can get to like being a Katamari ball. Like that's not eating. That's just absorbing.
Also, this means for eighth meal, I
eat a police precinct.
This means you poop 7 times a day.
Yeah.
Also.
I would be real worried being in the room with him if I were any kind of animal of size or substance. Because at one point, I know he's not hungry. Like, you can't be hungry eating like this. You just can't.
You don't think your body gets used to it and is like, no, it's hey, buddy, we've blown past meal 4 here a good 15 minutes. Chop, chop.
I can't imagine it. You know, like, they just don't look like they have fun when they're eating.
Yeah.
They're just, it's a job. You eat more than you train.
Right.
You know, like, I think that's true of most people, but, like, you eat.
It's like owning a steamship.
More coal.
Keep shoveling. A nice meaty chow walks in the. Yeah. Ooh. Hey, do you like that dog? How do you feel about that dog? Because I'll eat it. Straight up
with rice. I'm not a monster. With rice and broccoli.
Yeah. Yeah, you need some roughage to push that dog through.
Wow.
That I just ate.
The Cinnamon Toast Crunch is my favorite little thing in there.
What is the reason for the Cinnamon Toast Crunch? Because I as well found that the most fascinating.
Just a nice way to start the day, right?
I think honestly that's the one thing he gets to do in there where he's like, me time. What's my me time? I get some Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And then I begin the odyssey that is eating my way through this day. You know how much he's going to love just weighing 300 pounds when this is over? And he's like, oh, God. Oh,
the CTC has 35% of your daily iron.
Sure.
Oh.
I don't think he is low on iron. That does not seem to be a concern.
I am laughing, Ryan, though, at you expressing any kind of like, well, hey, what's this part about? Okay, what's the entire thing about? Like, this part doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense.
No. No, you're right. You're right.
Why are you eating an entire pound of ground beef as a snack? That might be the part I would ask about. Why are you eating 4 slices of cheesecake before dinner?
This now makes me wonder, and now we can ask them, apparently, what is the catering sitch like at the World's Strongest Man competition? Like, what on earth are they bringing in?
It's got to be tense.
Are they just like, here's a cow. Have fun, guys.
Yeah.
Here they come. Oh, God.
We bought a whole Publix for you. It's yours. Take it.
Like, I've
seen. Here you go, fellas. A dragon.
And it's got to be worse because he's big. He's naturally big. He's a 6'8 dude. He's probably had like an intense appetite his whole life. There are guys who aren't that big, like Eddie Hall, who shares a name with my dad, which is always my favorite thing when I see like Eddie Hall sets deadlift record. I'm like, kill it, dad. Absolutely killing it. Like Eddie Hall's not that big.
Yeah.
And Eddie Hall has to eat like he's only 6'3, you know, only. And that dude was a swimmer. He's got to eat like a horse.
Right.
Just to maintain weight.
I hope Bryson listens to this and is like, challenge accepted. Challenge accepted. I will become golf juggernaut.
But Bryson also has a whole other ambition, which is to live eternally.
That's true. He is balancing. He is balancing sick gains versus defy God.
Yeah, this man wants to be frozen and blasted in a spaceship as an AI consciousness and be reborn. Like, he wants to live around long enough to hitch onto that wagon.
Right.
Eddie Hall. Also pounding excess protein. Those two do not tend to go hand in hand.
Also, Eddie Hall's diet was around 20,000 calories. Wow. So it was more that, and he took two naps a day.
That's the sumo method there.
There's so much shopping. There must be so much shopping involved in this, right?
Oh, yeah. So what are you doing all day long? You train for like an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Right.
And the rest of your day is fetching food, eating food, and evacuating its waste. Like, you're just this gigantic, horrible, swollen, angry, powerful tube roaming the earth.
What you are, you're a cell. You're like a cell in your body where you're like, the only thing I do is take in nutrients, turn them into energy, and expel the waste and repeat. Like, that's all.
Yeah, you're a siphonophore. You're a sponge. You're just like, well, I'll follow the ocean today.
Folks, if you'd like to see these sponges in action, come on down to join us in Greater Metro Bradenton, Florida, where we are inviting ourselves to the World's Strongest Man competition.
Beautiful Bradenton, Florida.
Beautiful. Greater Bradenton, Florida.
Yeah, they're going to fuck up a Perkins there, man. They're going to destroy a Perkins.
This village belongs to me.
Oh, that pie case? Gone.
Yep.
Gone. They're just going to do that thing, like the Metalocalypse thing. They're going to put their face through the glass, which I've always wanted to do, right? Like, I'm going to look at that.
Shoney's leveled.
All-you-can-eat restaurant set on fire by owner. Leave! Yeah. I think it is time to, now that we've talked about our favorite thing, which is strongman competition, the thing that made this podcast great. We actually have football this weekend, and we have a new flavor of football for the 2020 season. I think the Big Ten is going to play football if they've made up their mind to do that decisively yet.
It appears that they have.
Yeah.
We have that big, carb-heavy, cheesy flavor, and we also have the tart, crisp, refreshing flavors of the Mountain West joining us.
Don't overlook that. Like, that's what's been the best league to watch this year so far in terms of unpredictable quality? That would be the Sun Belt. Sun Belt's just been knocking people off left and right, playing high-level football, and I now definitively know, after years of just assuming a pretty close guess, I know what a Chanticleer is. So the Sun Belt's been doing good things. Why not the Mountain West?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's fine. All of it's fine at this point.
Yeah, folks.
It's definitely not. But that's the thing we're just saying.
Right? Yeah, it's happening. We can say that. We can go that far.
It's definitely happening. I would, if I were going to say, okay, what am I looking at? I'm going to admit to being very cruel, and I'm going to watch Nebraska at Ohio State.
Because I think you're obligated to at this point.
Yeah, after making fun of Nebraska for wanting to play football in the first place so badly and agitating for it, now they get what they wanted. Be careful what you ask for, because you just might get Ohio State.
That is, without question, the Sickos game of the week.
Sickos game of the week. This is me looking in the window going, yeah. Yes.
The schedule is top heavy, is one way to describe it.
It's also compliment heavy. Like a handful of the noon games, like NC State and UNC have basically spent all week explaining why they're not good. Like Mac Brown is like, well, you know, I think we were quite overrated and NC State's quite underrated. And Dave Doran turns around. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. UNC underrated? I think not. Look how handsome you are. And Dabo, meanwhile, Syracuse hosts Clemson or goes to Clemson. And Dabo's like, well, we know all too well what a Syracuse can do to you. And Syracuse is just like, please, can we just, please. Let's just play a quarter and a half. That should be plenty.
Please don't acknowledge us.
Running clock.
Running clock. Starting now.
Can you eat 12,000 calories worth of food before you take the field? That would be good, Clemson. Do that. and see if you can still beat. This is one of those, can we do this and still beat Syracuse games?
How big of a lead could Syracuse spot Clemson that you would still take Clemson?
Well, what? The spread on this game is into the 40s
the
now?
The spread started in the 30s and is up to 45 and a half.
So, like...
that many.
So the thing about that is the 45 and a half is counting the fact that Clemson likes to just clock out of games as soon as possible. If Clemson left their starters in for all four quarters, how high are they going? Right? Like, that would be the number we'd have to factor here.
Because okay, what? Like they scored 73 against a Georgia Tech team that, while still, like, building, is probably better than Syracuse right now. So, like, it's probably not, it's got to be, like, 90, 95, right? It's maybe 100.
I mean, I know they can score 35 and a quarter, right? So if I give you two max quarters at 35 and then two at 20, one at 21, one at 28, just selecting randomly here, yeah, you're well over. Yeah, that's over 100.
It's like 120 points you just put on the board.
Yeah, no, and I feel pretty confident they could do it.
Tech is a little better than Clemson. That game was in Atlanta, not Clemson. Right. Clemson had punters throwing to backup Swinneys, not even right. top Swinney. And Georgia Tech was actively running clock the entire game.
I mean, Syracuse just got run on for like 300 some yards by Liberty. And Liberty is not a bad team or anything, but like it still is not what you expect to happen with an AC. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, don't watch that. Watch Nebraska. Don't watch that. Watch the same thing happen to Nebraska.
Watch 35 and a quarter.
And I'm gonna be very honest. There's some part of me, and I don't understand this part, and I can't explain it. There's some part of me that's like, it would be really funny if Nebraska won that game. It would be really funny if Nebraska won that game.
One of these teams is gonna lose, and that's fine.
Yeah.
It'd be side splitting. It would be the funniest thing to happen for them to go like, we told you we wanted to play.
And then lose.
Because the funniest thing I think Nebraska could do this year would be to pull the Mississippi State, where they start the year with huge road upset, like playoff-changing road upset, where everybody's like, wow, it's all coming together, it's working better than anybody thought, and then immediately just lose every game after that. Just go 1-9 or whatever.
I mean, remember, they wanted this schedule, and then they bitched about it. Their next game is Wisconsin, and they got to go at Northwestern. Not exactly a guarantee. Then they got Penn State. So, yeah, that could happen. could 1-3 with the W of Ohio State.
They're on the Mississippi State plan is what they're on, right? Like, we cannot die!
Yes.
Oh, no, we're dying.
We're dying a lot. Again. We're dying a lot.
Yeah. Another game on the schedule that I find intriguing in terms of, hey, what are y'all rolling out? I know what Minnesota's putting on the field. I know what they're going to do. I have no idea what Michigan's going to look like, and neither does Michigan. Be very exciting.
There are several computers that are favoring Minnesota over Michigan. Michigan at 0-1 could be perilous.
That said, like, PJ Flex basically already said, like, yeah, we got COVID, but I'm not telling you about it, cop.
I believe Harbaugh also said, yeah, we've had some positive tests. And then in a press conference today, I was like, yeah, we don't have any positive tests.
Okay.
Cool. Remember, consent to search is the number one way that they get you.
you can say anything into this mic. Anything at all. It doesn't matter.
The game I am most interested in is number 17 Iowa State at number 6 Oklahoma State. Because I think these are the only two Big 12 teams that are ranked, unless I've forgotten somebody. Kansas State is ranked too. Apologies to Kansas State, who will probably kill me for that, but that's fine.
God, that's weird as shit. Those are the three ranked Big 12 teams. Go on.
Can either of you tell me the three games Oklahoma State has played this year?
An FCS. Tulsa. Barely beat Tulsa.
Barely beat Tulsa, correct.
FCS game?
Nope.
Okay.
Did they play a... Man, I want to say
they played two conference games.
Oh,
they
right.
were supposed to play Baylor. They were supposed to play Baylor, and that got postponed, but they have played two other Big 12
Did they play Kansas?
They destroyed Kansas by 40 points.
Yeah.
And they beat West Virginia by two touchdowns.
West Virginia's
pretty
good.
But that's like... Because the shit's so weird... barely beat Tulsa. Like, had to fight with Tulsa. I won't say barely beat, but, like, had to fight with Tulsa. Beat West Virginia, fine. Destroyed Kansas. You're sixth. You're sixth in the nation. And there's nobody, like, there's no evidence for me to say, like, you shouldn't be here. You don't deserve it. And on the other side, it's an Iowa State team that lost to Louisiana, barely beat TCU, and then beat Oklahoma, and then beat Texas Tech. But Texas Tech doesn't really matter right now. So, yeah, like, numbers are just numbers. They just mean whatever you want them to mean. Sure, Oklahoma State's 6. Virginia Tech's 19. Whatever. Just say whatever you want.
Let's just establish the 5 spot as the ring of death. Like, that's it. Like, 5 spot, UNC ends up losing to FSU.
Okay, so Ohio State is losing to Nebraska then. You just
done.
Said.
Done. Starting at 5. We're calling that shot on Scott Frost Day.
Wow.
So that was 1. We're going to get Oklahoma State into the top 4 right here because 3, Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Everything's
yeah.
going great for you. You put up big 12 points against Louisville. That's spectacular in the year 1862. That would be a great score. You're going to play Pitt. Pitt's 3-3. Well, surely that's, you know, pretty even. Like, maybe they lost a game early, lost another, and then won a few.
I thought there was a motorcycle outside my house because of Spencer.
You are walking into Pittsburgh facing a Panthers team that has lost 3 straight games. 2 of them by a single point. The super weapon had a chance to discharge last week, and they didn't even cover against Miami. Shit is even more perilous for you now than before. So, Notre Dame. Down you go. Up Oklahoma State goes, passing Ohio State and Notre Dame. Actually, I think the most AP shit would be Oklahoma State remaining behind Ohio State and Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's true.
That's definitely what happened in the coaches' poll. That's the coaches' poll behavior there.
Yeah. Super weapons charge as hell. Like, it's ready to go. Somebody just needs to walk in front of it at the wrong time. What's the wrong time? Who can say?
Spencer, I thought about adding, like, 10 paragraphs to that just to see how much you could add to that rumble.
I was about to start coughing. It was starting.
Okay.
To,
all right.
Yeah. So I was glad.
Spencer, tell me one thing that you are confident will happen in this game. South Carolina at LSU.
No.
Okay.
I have one. Yep. There will be a debate about college baseball.
This is correct. I got one other brand adjacent heater of a game that I'm sure, if I know both teams, will end with pain for those involved and excitement and horrified fascination for everyone watching. And I can't believe nobody else isn't pointing this out. It's on FS1 at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. That would be Indiana hosting Penn State. I know one thing about my dear 9-win Hoosiers, and it's this. They're going to make it as difficult as possible on everyone involved, including themselves.
They will have a lead. We know that much.
How long?
Well, they'll have it.
Will it be safe? Friend, nothing is safe when it comes to Indiana football.
Life is about moments.
Appreciate that moment.
Speaking of Indiana football.
There we go.
Thank you. Today's episode of the Shutdown Fullcast, sponsored as always by our good Indiana Big Ten friends at homefieldapparel.com. Rolling out not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, but 5 schools for this big news Saturday. They are Joe Flacco's own Delaware Blue Hens, UC Irvine, Fresno State, the cradle of Dilfer, Rice. why do we go to the moon? Why does Rice play Texas? So that you can buy comfortable t-shirts and sweatshirts. And bowling success and baseball school Vanderbilt. Here, number 5 on this list. So
And Vanderbilt.
I'm pretty excited about this because this is like this big news Saturday, because it's these 5, it's sort of like, hey, what do you want your WITSEC identity to be? You know, like, who do you want to be, like, do you, like, name, Spencer, name somebody you know in your life from Delaware.
No.
Can't do it. Jason, can you do it?
Cuppy Cup.
Is from Delaware?
I think so.
That's insane.
If not, then he is now.
Okay. Like,
because nothing in Delaware is real. It's not,
no.
It's not a real state.
Delaware is the thing, like, anybody could say, oh, where'd you grow up? Delaware. Sure. I have no way to fact check that. There's no documents that can prove or disprove that. UC Irvine, like, not a UC school that people associate anything with. Fresno State? Who's making up, like, oh, I have a deep Fresno State background? Rice, maybe there's a little risk there. And Vanderbilt, like, do you look rich? You're fine. Like, you can make, all I'm saying is, if you want to change your life, like, literally change it, your name, your identity, your backstory, whatever, if you want to leave everything behind and cut ties and never talk to your family again, Home Field Apparel can help you do that via sweatshirt or t-shirt.
Hey, Vanderbilt's good for that because Skip Bayless doesn't talk to his family, so.
And
I feel like if the cops pursue you to Fresno, it's like the scene in Fast and Furious where the cops chase them to Brazil, and Vin Diesel just says, "No, you're in Brazil."
Yeah.
So
Fresno is America's base. They can't touch you there once you touch base. Yeah. You can get 20% off your first order when you use the offer code FULLCAST. You will want that 20% off because in your new life, you're gonna need to be cash heavy for a while. You can't, you know, your old bank accounts you can't rely on. You do need to just have a lot of cash with you. I imagine, frankly, if you just DM Homefield and are like, hey, I'm going under an assumed identity, and, you know, I can't use a credit card right now, can I just show up with an envelope of cash at an undisclosed location and swap you for a Rice sweatshirt? They'll say yes. They're cool.
Yeah, lucky you. Most of Indiana is an undisclosed location.
Yeah, by design.
So, yeah. I hope you're happy with that one, Connor. Probably not.
I really like the UC Irvine Anteaters logo where he's saying Zot. He or she.
He's saying Zot.
The Anteater has a speech bubble that is explosive and it says Zot.
It is a very, it is a very, like, Sunday comic that you didn't read. Anteater.
Yeah,
where you're like, this one talks about politics a lot.
Yeah, when y'all were kids, did you read, like, the newspaper comics page? I did that.
I do some of them, but some of them you get to and you'd be like, this is, I don't understand. This is making a lot of jokes about the deficit.
I'm 9 years old. I'm not reading Doonesbury.
Right.
But this one would be one that had not changed in, like, 80 years.
Correct.
Yeah, like Gasoline Alley. I used to read Gasoline Alley didn't even, I thought it was so brave because it didn't even follow the conventions of narrative form. The person constructing Gasoline Alley had obviously died 40 years earlier, and they were just mixing in random panels that were sort of related. So one thing would be like, Walt, not the gas station. And then the next panel would be something exploding. And then there would be somebody cooking eggs going, ah, great start to the day. And that was Gasoline Alley. That's
pretty good comedy, though.
I thought it was a pretty good, like, after a while, you kind of got addicted to it because you're like, yeah, this is surreal. This is like Akewood before Akewood. I really enjoy it. Also, real glad that this whole thing died out before Akewood ended up in the papers, because people would, like, the letters to the editor would have been amazing if you've ever read Akewood. They would be like, why is the cat wearing a Speedo? This is immoral. Speaking of immoral, our readers and listeners decided to, again, after we asked them four questions,
real quick, UC Irvine has more NCAA national championships than Vanderbilt. Just wanted to get that in there.
It is known. In response, Zot. you talking shit, Vandy? I got one word to say to you.
Zot! Zot, motherfucker.
Zot. There goes your bowling championship. Zot.
Damn. Just snatched that.
Yep.
That's the only thing they're going to do. That's their only trash talk. I would love to play for UC Irvine football just so I could do that. Be like, Zot!
Gotcha.
Our readers, after we requested our weekly ask for one question for our mailbag. Other podcasts, they divide attention. They just scatter it around, and they turn dollars into cents by answering multiple questions and thus dividing the attention of the enormous brains of their host. That is not what we do here. What we do is we take the combined brain power of all three of our enormous skulls and we apply it to one extremely important reader-submitted question, the one question mailbag that we do for the midweek full cast. This week, I have selected the following. It is an important... I'm going to call this a football question. This is from Fourth and Jort, longtime supporter of the full cast, Moon Crew, and etc. Thank you, sir. The question is, what is the worst kids' book? This is a serious competition with a lot of worthy or, I guess, unworthy candidates for the eyes of your kids. But what is the worst kids' book in your opinion?
I feel like, Ryan, you're the closest to the situation because you have the youngest kid here.
So my a lot of my answers are going to be functional in that regard. Like, to me, a bad kids' book is, hi, did you put the text on the page in a color that is not very high contrast to the background? Because now I can't fucking read. Like, when I put my kid to bed and we're like turning the lights off and getting cozy, like, I can't fucking read. And I have to guess what these words are. Are the words unnecessarily small? Like, that's the kind of thing. I will say one of the books or one of the series that has been grinding on me lately is Eloise. I don't know if you're familiar with the Eloise oeuvre.
Mm-mm.
Eloise is a child who lives at the Plaza Hotel, like, let's say in the 70s or something like that, maybe the 60s, when the Plaza, like, I think a lot of New York City hotels at the time was a combination of, like, apartment building, like, apartment living and hotel, I think. And, like, her whole vibe is like, yeah, I just do whatever I want here. I, like, run down the hall with a stick and just hit every door on the way. I, like, pour honey down the mail chute. I fuck with, like, the phones in the lobby. I bother the doorman. And that's it. There's not, like, there is no comeuppance. There is no, like, and but you shouldn't do that because but you should be, like, thoughtful and aware of the people around you. It's none of that. It's just like, I am a New Yorker who has an apartment and fuck everybody else. And on the one hand, that is in some ways a useful lesson for children who grow up in New York. Like, either A, maybe you're going to be like this and it's better to get it out of the way now, or B, be aware that other people will be. But there's not, like... There's nothing there. It's like, here's a bunch of behavior I don't want you to emulate. This kid's just having fun with it. No adult really gets that mad, and there's no lesson learned. The end.
Nice.
Yeah. This sounds like an accurate portrayal of what it's like to be a 45-year-old New Yorker, though.
Everybody
can be like 12 in New York forever.
There's not like enough bedbugs.
I pick up a phone and someone brings food to my room.
There's not enough like bedbug scenarios in it, but other than that, yeah.
Do you do your own laundry? No, someone brings it to my house magically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, do you have a real job? No, I go to a box and I talk. People pay me for it. Yeah.
That's podcasting. That's what we're doing.
That's exactly. Hey,
it's a noble profession, sir.
The statement is not exclusionary. Okay.
We are both hunter and gatherer.
Yeah.
This is how our ancestors.
We hunt audio and we gather it here.
Jason, what is your worst kids book?
I mean, the very first one that came to mind is also the very first book that comes to mind for any question. It's the Bible, which is often framed as a collection of simple, relatable cartoon moral stories that are applicable to people of any age, that can be taken at face value, that can be reduced down to simple do or do not morals. And on Vacation Bible School, we have completed Genesis, And if someone were to say, all right, base your life on what we learned in Genesis, I would probably not associate with that person because they're going to spend all their time trying to undermine their older siblings. They might have like, you know, called down fire on a city that they didn't like. Like, there are, you know, deep, beautiful, valuable moral lessons, and there are some wholesome, good stories. But they they are not the ones that we think of as the, you know, as the sweet, beautiful, simple, reducible lessons. We've talked about Noah's Ark on here, and Ryan has talked about Noah's Ark. And like, the reason for the flood is not that, like, you know, everyone was being selfish and mean. It was like they were having sex with angels. So, like, okay, I'll try to avoid that. Right,
that's the
moral lesson. Well,
I
you
will continue.
You're gonna get us all flooded again.
Too bad.
Dummy.
I love it.
It's for the good of the world. Don't be selfish, Ryan. Well, he said he wouldn't flood us again with water, but he didn't say that he wouldn't flood us with, you know, applesauce or vinegar or any other liquid. So I would not test it. If you try to be discreet, all right. Let's just say that. But yeah, the Bible, it should have a big old content warning right on the front of it. You know, it's not, most of it's not for kids. Some of it is.
Man, that would be that's such a tricky conversation to have with your significant other. So what were you doing last night? Well, I had sex with an angel.
So there's this angel. So you got to make it sound extremely cool. First of all, like, you won't believe it. I saw an angel. I saw an angel.
What I did. It was absolutely crazy. Don't get mad. You promise not to get mad? Promise not to get mad. Uh-huh. Yeah. He was an angel for real, and his name was Randy. I bet it was.
Yeah, he's in the taxonomy of angels. He's like 732nd on
That's
there.
Right.
He's in
he there. Protects airport bars. That's his job.
This angel steal a credit card out of your wallet while I was on the nightstand, honey?
Yeah, so I wouldn't be covetous.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be obsessed with material wealth.
So my worst kid's book is The Boxcar Children. Have either of you read The Boxcar Children?
Sure.
It's a popular...
Isn't there also a visual of some sort? A show? Or?
Yes. There have been several adaptations of it. But the outline is first published in 1924, gets a revision in the 40s. The revision in the 40s to introduce everybody to the Boxcar Children, who may not be familiar with this atrocious relic of a society that should be condemned to hell and damned for all of time, is this. The orphaning of the children is eliminated as a direct event so that the story is less horrifying. It's basically about four orphans who have been orphaned for some time when the revision joins them. In the original, they're graphically orphaned in the first 10 to 20 pages, which, as you know, every child loves to read about before they go to bed.
Yep.
Their parents, who married against their hard-hearted, wealthy grandfather's wishes and are estranged from him, have died, and they're wandering from town to town, hungry and cold. One night, they stop at a bakery to ask for food. The baker offers to take them in, but the kids are, by the way, run away from the baker because they overhear the baker talking about using them as labor. That's why they run into the woods in the first place. When they're there, they find a boxcar. Boxcar becomes their home.
That's not sure. It's actually much worse.
Eventually, realizing, and I quote, that they cannot live on water and blueberries, they go into town.
Not if you want to be the world's strongest man.
It's true. Meanwhile, their hard-hearted grandfather, who it turns out is a steel baron, who, by the way, they're homeless because he didn't approve of his child's marriage to one of their parents. He introduces them, and they find out that the cruel steel baron is actually a really good guy. They go to live with him, and at the end of the first book, because they miss the boxcar, he has it transported to their backyard so they can visit it anytime they like.
You skipped over one important part. I'm looking at the Wikipedia summary. I assume that's what you're looking at as well.
I went by that as an outline, and I still forgot something. I'm so impressive.
There's a part in this where the oldest boxcar child goes into town and starts doing odd jobs for, like, the town doctor. And the town doctor is like something seems weird here. So he follows the kid home. And by home, I mean to the boxcar, the abandoned boxcar. And after seeing this, again, this is a physician, sees children living in an abandoned rail car and decides, they're fine. I'll let him tell me about it when he wants to.
I don't think he's wrong. I think that, like, four children, you think
a doctor made the right decision when he saw four children living without an adult in a boxcar, and said, they're fine.
Yeah. No. Because inevitably, they were going to be, split up, right? Because what makes you think that anybody in this story is moral enough to, one, not instantly use them as slave labor, and two, to go, nah, I only like two of them. This one looks like a Spaniard. Like, everyone in this... Everyone except the kids in this story is a complete blithering idiot. All of them. Every single one of them. How does a grandfather completely lose track of his children?
He's it's the 40s. There's, like, you know, there's no cell phones.
Dude, you got to know what town they're in. He's like, oh, I don't know. They're just abstractions. He's got a map. I know they had maps. I know they had telegrams. Couldn't he have just taken off his top hat, picked
what
up the enormous ivory-handled phone, and gone?
What would you telegram?
Town?
Yeah, hi, town. Have you seen four rando kids? No? You didn't respond, so I don't know what to do now.
Don't like, send police to the place where this telegram originated from, asking, like, why someone has lost track of children. Because I'm just asking in, you know, a general way.
In a fun way.
Evidently, no one would have blinked. They would have been like, orphans? Which ones? We've got hundreds of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is I think that's also, like, part of it is this is a time when, like, orphan was just like a category of child out in the world. You know, you'd be like, oh, look, there's some third graders and there's some, look at those high schoolers and there's some orphans. It's just like, you know, it's just like naming types of flowers or vegetables or something.
Give them cigarettes. They'll love it. Yeah. Everyone in this book is a terrible human. All of them. Including the doctor, who's only least terrible by going, yeah, they should probably just stay feral in a boxcar. I'll just get them something other than blueberries and water to eat.
There's so many, now that I'm thinking about it, like, so many stories about children require orphaning. Like, there's a real through line here of, like, hey, if your parents are still alive, your life's going to be hella boring. If you want to be Little Orphan Annie or the Boxcar Children or Batman, you better hope those parents kick the bucket. You want to do some cool shit? You better be an orphan.
This is definitely a thing in, like, young adult literature. It's, like, a common thing. Like, the question of, all right, you're making a story. How do you get rid of the parents? And, like, by now, everyone has tried every method. Right, like, the parents die on page one, or the parents were in a shipwreck just off camera, or, you know, the parents are out of town for Christmas.
Huck Finn's dad is like the town drunk, right?
Yeah, they just instantly write him out by being like, that's the worst one, because it's like, he's actually engaged in a living death, a fate more horrible than the big sleep itself, you know? But let's get a couple of good drunkard jokes in while we can. Because things are dark in Missouri, and the humor is pretty rough around here. Yeah,
right.
I think there's the thing about where you have to put the adolescent or pre-adolescent on trial so that they can discover things about themselves. And I know what the boxcar children discovered. They discovered that steel barons are your real friends. And that small cottage industries aren't the ones who are supposed to use child labor. No, big, safe factories run by nice men.
I like that this was
propaganda.
This was also the birth of glamping, where the Steel Baron's like, oh, I know, we'll just bring the boxcar home and then we can have pretend camp out. Isn't it fun to pretend to be homeless orphans again?
I guarantee,
isn't this a fun game?
I'm going to look this up right now. Converted boxcar house.
Oh,
I guarantee
God.
You there's some video shot with a fucking drone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's some grand design shit right there.
Yeah,
old
this
railway
is also...
carriage converted into stunning off-grid home. Actually, yep. Sounds pretty good now that we're...
yeah, like this is also the 1920s and 1930s where I know two people died getting that rail car to the Steel Baron's home, right? Like one of
right.
tetanus and then one where they did something amazingly ignorant like, well, we were transporting it with a can of gasoline and a man smoked right next to it.
Right.
Thought it
and
was
the,
water.
And the other two were not paid because he's like, this boxcar, you cracked this boxcar. I'll take it out of your wages.
Yeah. You brought it to me missing one panel. I'm going to dock you all 4 months' wages because I'm a horrible person. And that's how I became wealthy.
I will also say I take issue with, like, them adopting the boxcar. Like, they're the boxcar children after this. And there are more books. They don't
oh, yeah.
go back to living in the boxcar in the woods. And it's sort of like, it's a version of, like, we get it. You went on study abroad and it was, like, an amazing month of your life. But, like, you can't call yourself, like, Castilian Dave. That doesn't make sense. And you're not. You're from Ohio. Stop it.
So in subsequent stories, do they like go
they're
back
all...
to the boxcar?
No. They it becomes like I think it becomes like kind of like an Encyclopedia Brown type thing
yeah,
where they solve like mysteries and shit.
Minor mysteries that they solve. Things where the Steel Baron is like, someone's been stealing a farthing a week out of the till.
Someone's taking my steel.
Yeah, who's taking my steel? And they're like, well, it's this hungry, starving, single mother. It's like, I'll have her clapped in irons. Thank you, boxcar children.
Now I'll read to you about tariffs before you go to sleep.
Exactly. Like volume 8 of the boxcar children is like, why we should clear these bonus babies off the White House lawn and stop their sponging off of good men like Herbert Hoover. You know, like... That's they're just these wildly like, that young man in Germany has some good ideas about how to run a country. Boxcar children is like, really, the many can become strong as one so long as we listen to the ones. Screw the boxcar children, okay? Like, screw them. This is just sad authoritarian literature that teaches children terrible lessons about survivalism.
I'm glad we've canceled the boxcar children.